Blog Talk Radio.
The full wrath of Mother Nature can be seen from my window, with over a foot of snow covering my home and so many others here in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, New Hampshire, and Maine. Our first snowstorm of the new year provides a picturesque postcard as we discuss my top 10 trends for 2014. They relate to diversity, multiculturalism, inclusion, technology, social issues, and the workplace directives. And I'm sure that at least one of the trends relates to you, your family, and your colleagues. So sit back and listen to my perspective on where we're headed in 2014, and I hope that you're off to a brilliant new year and a healthy start. 2014 is here. Are you ready for the change, choices, and challenges for the next 12 months that will bring? This is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and you're listening to a special edition of Focus on Empowerment. Well, hello and welcome, my friends. I hope you are having a joyous new year. I hope that your holiday seasons, which are now gone, it's hard to believe it's already, we're looking at Christmas that left a week ago and we're already into the new year. I hope that your holiday season was a very pleasant one. Well, I shifted, obviously, if you're listening live or if you're archiving the show after the fact, you realize that I'm doing this show on a Friday at 1 o'clock. Sort of goes back to the days when I was on terrestrial radio on WILD in Boston, and my show was always at Friday at 1 o'clock. So I'm sort of going back to this just for this week before we go back to a 1 o'clock schedule next week and for the rest of the year. But I needed to make the switch because we have inclement weather here. We have probably about a foot of snow where I'm living and up to 2+ feet of snow in other parts of coastal Massachusetts going up to New Hampshire and Maine as well. This was a coastal storm that matched with the storm that came out of the Chicago area, and voila, you have a lot of light, fluffy snow. It's about 12 degrees outside now, and believe it or not, the snow is actually melting because the sun is shining, so we're very happy about that. But I needed to switch my show because I was going to probably be on grandmother duty. I have two beautiful granddaughters. Their parents, my daughter and son-in-law, both work full-time. And they had to go to work, but they were able to rearrange their schedules, and so I didn't have to step in and play my grandmotherly duty, as I'll do in February for school vacation week, so I needed to shift the time of the show. But I'm hoping that this is starting off to be a good year for you, a year of promise and possibilities, and as my pastor says, where you're looking at your peaks and not your pits. All of us had something last year that we had to work through, funnel through, resolve. But the wonderful thing about 2014 is that this really is a reset button where you are having an opportunity to reset your button and look at this year fresh from fresh eyes moving forward. I certainly am doing that, and I hope that you will do the same. So what I want to do for the next 20 minutes or so is for the show lasting, I want to share with you 10 trends that I am seeing and observing and researching, specifically as it relates to the workplace, but it really relates to society at large. There are some political implications, there are workplace implications, there are implications in terms of our neighborhoods, our family structures. Wherever you happen to live, you're going to be impacted by at least one of these trends. I presented this to the Diversity and Inclusion Forum, of which I chair, for the Northeast Human Resources Association, NARA, last month. And I thought it was of worthiness enough to share with you so that you can begin to think about what are some of the implications of our jobs, our societies, our connectedness, demographically, whether you want to face it or not. We are in a very different society today, whether you are in America, Canada, parts of Central or South America, if you're in parts of Europe, Asia, Africa, Australia, demographically, your area, your greater society is changing. And it's in that spirit that I'm hoping that people will begin to embrace the changes that are around them. The number one tip that I have here and the trend that I'm seeing is the whole piece about immigration. Now, immigration is hitting the Americas. It's hitting Europe. It has hit even South Africa. Back in 2009, there were some immigration dynamics that were not very pleasant, where the immigrants from Zimbabwe and other parts of Africa were coming to South Africa because they had jobs, and the local population and some of the local population reacted negatively to those who were coming looking for jobs. Let's face it, most people move to another part of the world, whether they're moving to the United States or Canada or parts of Europe, London, they're moving there to work. They're moving there or for political, because political possibilities are unfortunately against them. I'm now getting a feedback here, so I'm going to start shutting down some things. Let me see if I can shut this down, and I think that probably did it. I was getting, unfortunately, a feedback. But no matter where you happen to live, some people, some parts of the population will negatively react against immigration issues. I'm hoping that here, when I speak as an American, I'm hoping that that won't happen here. I'm hoping that we will finally face the immigration issues that we have, the opportunities, the challenges, and somehow get some kind of immigration reform act in place in the United States so that the 12 million undocumented residents of this country who have been here for a long time, some were born here, some came here shortly after birth because their parents brought them here from different parts of the world. We need to get immigration reform policies in place in the United States. And I'm really thinking that in our country, we're now to the point where it's going to be addressed. So that, to me, is going to be a front burner issue. It's been a back burner issue for some time, but it's going to need to be a front burner issue in order for us to really move forward as a society. And the same thing is going to take place in different parts of the world. So when I talk about immigration, again, I'm looking at what's taking place in other parts of the world as well. As people react to those who come, those who overstay their visa and then become permanent residents, whether you like it or not, they're here. In America, people, the 12 million people who are here in this country, they're here to stay. They're not going back home where you want them to go back. They are actually here to stay. So I'm hoping that that dialogue will begin, and I think it will begin in the year 2014, certainly as President Obama begins to wrap up his presidency. He is now into his sixth year and only has two more years to go after this before he then leaves office, and I believe this is going to be a front burner issue. Number two is health care. Health care, whether you call it the Affordable Care Act, I'm talking specifically about America at this point, whether you're talking about the America Health Care Reform Act, the Affordable Health Care Act, or whether you call it Obamacare, whatever you happen to call it, it is here. It started, yes, 2 days ago on January 1st. It actually started last year because some of the segments were included. Certainly, if you had children under the age of 26, they could continue to be included on your health care policy. So some of those acts started before 2014. But the refusal of taking someone on your policy because they have a pre-existing condition has now been struck down, and this whole concept of national health care is in full effect in 2014. Yes, we had problems with the website in October. Yes, they will continue to work on it, and they'll probably have some more issues. But I want to tell you two personal stories why this is the order of the day and why there are many implications in terms of how we need to understand what the ACA Act is and how it impacts each one of us. Number one, I have a very good friend who is a business owner like I am. and she's a very dear friend. She and her husband are very dear friends, and they've had some health challenges. Their health insurance was almost $3,000 a month, not a year, $3,000 a month in this country because of the health challenges that they have. Because she was smart enough to sign up for the Affordable Care Act before the deadline. Well, actually, the deadline was extended to March, but she signed up shortly after it started in October. She talked to somebody on the phone, didn't have many hassles in terms of the website, got through, took care of all the paperwork, got approved, was able to go through the exchange marketplace, found a policy that met her needs and her husband's needs to the extent that they now are insured for not $2,700 or almost $3,000 a month, but well under $300 a month. Significant drop because of whether you call it Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act. And in my own situation, because I was paying a hefty amount for health insurance because I'm also a business owner, I looked into the Affordable Care Act, and I applied and didn't know what was going to happen, and it was a very smooth process. It took 10 days, that's all. I then got a letter in the mail which immediately insured me on January 1st. They are still sorting out the details. They'll get back to me in terms of what my rate is going to be, but instead of waiting and putting me on the rolls after the fact, after everything was taken care of, I was immediately added on January 1st. So I'm talking from personal experience and from the experience of my friend. We're working people, we have businesses, we are benefiting from the Affordable Care Act. So I will have much more to talk about that in the days and weeks ahead, but it is here to stay in America and one that I would encourage all of you to really take a look at very carefully because your own policy may be impacted by it. We already have seen where some policies have disappeared because they really weren't great policies. And in exchange, there will be better policies because of the Affordable Care Act. Number three is technology. I want to read a comment from Noah Elkin, who is the principal analyst for eMarketer, and the importance of us understanding technology is a way of life now. Whether you are using smartphones or whatever, you are impacted by technology. And his comment was, smartphones and tablets have effectively become the center and the integrating component of consumers' market platform lives, and multi-platform lives. In that sense, though, mobile is more than the new desktop. It has the role with far greater significance than simply serving as a substitute computer device. This shift is reflected in qualitative terms in the amount of time consumers spend on their mobile devices on a daily basis and the qualitatively in the way that the devices have effectively become the remote control of consumers' lives and workplaces. I have a business that is driven by technology. I'm talking to you right now on my smartphone. I'm looking at my laptop because the control for this radio program is on my laptop, and I see my wonderful friends in the chat room. Hello to those of you who are in the chat room. And then I will get statistics on those who download my show after the fact. Typically, sometimes I'll have those who are listening on the phone, and I'll see who that happens to be. So even from a radio perspective, I am heavily impacted. I couldn't even do this radio show had it not been for the opportunity of blogging on an audio platform like Blog Talk. I just mentioned to you earlier that I used to be on WILD Radio in Boston, and I would physically have to drive into that station, put my headphones on, the engineer was behind the glass, and we would just rock and roll with the radio show. I did the same thing when I was on WBNW radio. I would have to drive into the station and do the same thing. I was then able to do some remote shows, but it was a little complicated. So technology has literally shifted the way I communicate on the airwaves through Blog Talk. And then every other aspect of my business, when it comes to the events that I put on, when it comes to the programs that I do from a speaking perspective, technology is just where I am. So I see it firsthand, and so many other people will as well. Number four is succession planning. The significance of succession planning is very important. You can download these slides. You could go to my blog today, tellcarole.com, T-E-L-L-C-A-R-O-L-E, for those of you who are listening. Go to today's blog and you'll click through to a set of slides that include all the slides that I'm talking through today. And you'll see a picture of my cousin, Jackie Gaines, who is a well-respected hospital administrator. She was the president and CEO of a leading teaching facility out in Portland, Oregon for a number of years, and then transferred and became the CEO of a Pennsylvania-based hospital complex. And now she is an executive. She's a person who goes around the country. She consults, she writes books, but she knows everything about hospital leadership and administration. She benefited from having a mentor many years ago when she was at Johns Hopkins University, Johns Hopkins Hospital, as a nurse, became a very well-respected nurse, and then moved into leadership roles, and one thing has led to another. Her story is a unique one because you find so few women, black, white, or whatever, in hospital administration. But the key word is mentorship and the people who led her to a path of leadership that obviously benefited her. We are hopefully going to see more succession planning strategies that include networking, include mentorship, and including people of talent, regardless of who they are, to succeed those who are already in power. The next trend, number five, doing more with less. I can do a whole show on that, with the number of people who have had budget cuts and their staffing responsibilities have increased. They are finding that they're taking on more responsibilities because their jobs or their opportunities include that. Well, how can we balance this shift in terms of doing more with less so that people don't get burned out, the pressure is not too much for them, or they don't necessarily have the skill sets to do what they're doing? So to me, there needs to be more focus and more emphasis on this because this is a growing trend. Number six, diversity, inclusion, and the expansion of terminology. You know, now we use the word inclusion, which has been a popular term for probably 5 or 6 years. 20 years ago, diversity was the buzzword. You just needed to use the word buzzword. You just needed to use the word diversity for people to understand what you were saying. But now this whole concept has taken on a whole host and a whole range of terminology. Diversity meaning diversity of thought, ideas, beyond race and gender issues. Inclusion, making sure that people feel like that they are an active part of an organization. And so the word inclusion has been inserted so that that whole concept of everyone being a part of an organization or community can be emphasized in that terminology. I prefer using the word multicultural because it has, I think, a more global concept, and it is a word that can be made socially acceptable in parts of the world outside of the United States. So that's my preferred word, but I tend to use the terminologies interchangeably, diversity, inclusion, and multiculturalism. My concern and my hope is that the fundamentals of diversity, including race and gender, don't get swept out to sea. They are still extremely important based on trend number seven that I'm getting ready to talk to you about. I'm hoping that they have an anchored position while we explore a lot of the other terminologies, the other concepts that fall under this cross-cultural competency, diversity, inclusion, multicultural equation and space that we operate under. So the expansion is the key piece, but making sure that the fundamentals are still there as well. Number seven, backlash. Backlash. We see it politically. We see it in some of the conversations that we have. We see it particularly in societies that where change is introduced or companies where change is introduced and people have a natural reaction against it. Now, it's normal, and people shouldn't be faulted for reacting a certain way if change is in the midst. That's part of life. It is, how can we anticipate change? How can we bring in new people who are ethnically different? How can we do things in such a way where we can minimize the backlash and we can increase the dialogue? Minimize the backlash, increase the dialogue. Well, it takes studying and learning. It takes, I think, the accountability and the responsibility that people have to study up on an issue and to learn about an issue. I was having this conversation a few days ago with someone, and I had done some research and knew the background about a particular issue here in the greater Boston area, and I was able to educate this person just based on the knowledge so that the reaction that I received from this person was not as negative as it was initially. So for me, the backlash can be reduced when we minimize the level of information, when we minimize the level of ignorance, should I say, that people have, and increase the knowledge base that people really need. We're in the age of information and technology. There's no stranger about that. But I think it's our responsibility to know about key concepts, some of the social dynamics that are in our marketplace and in our community, some of the political issues that are taking place. Certainly voter education is so critically important. Knowing in my country, 2014 is going to be a midterm election year, and so we're going to have very important congressional races. There will also be bills on our election ballot that will impact us, and it is up to us to minimize the backlash by learning about some of these issues. So the backlash can be countered, but the backlash is unfortunately going to be in place for all these reasons. Number eight is that even though, you know, we're throwing around all these terms and I'm encouraging people to learn about each other, we're still living in cultural silos. Case in point, I remember years ago doing a project for a town, a local town, and the one thing I realized is that all the kids would go to school together, but that didn't mean that it translated to some kind of social interaction out of school. From the parents' perspective, the kids may play together, they may be on a sports team together, but it didn't translate to the parents socially engaging in activities together, block club activities on a wide scale basis. It is easier than ever because of technology and because we can be socially isolated in a way that doesn't impact us financially, where these silos will be in place for a long time, and it's a matter of us breaking through these cultural silos. I'm speaking specifically of neighborhoods and places where you live in neighborhoods. I'm looking at all the snow outside my window right now, and I live in a predominantly white neighborhood where politically many of the people here are rather conservative, and many of them are Republicans, but they're still great neighbors. And when the long and short of it, when you have a snowstorm that dumps a whole lot of snow, and sometimes we have these lights go out, we have blackouts for, you know, a day or two at a time, I need to depend on my neighbors, and they need to depend on me. So we call each other to make sure we're okay. So the demographic changes or the ethnic differences that I experience in the neighborhood I'm living in totally are erased when a snowstorm comes about or when the lights go out or something else impacts my neighborhood. So that neighborliness, the importance of that neighborliness, I think, needs to be translated throughout the societies we live in, whether you are living in southern India, and whether you're living in southern Africa, or whether you're living in the northern half of the United States or living in New England. These cultural silos, we need to break them down one by one, and you just do it by learning about each other and keeping the lines of communication as open as possible. Number nine is this whole trend, this sort of goes with one of the earlier trends, doing more with less. People are overworked and often underpaid. And that level of being underpaid causes people to take on two and three jobs in some cases, which obviously impacts our households, our communities, et cetera. So how can we balance our lives when there are a set of circumstances on the job that are out of your control, where you're working, wage a living, or you're working very hard, and you have to either take on more employment, you've got to take on more responsibility. How can we balance the playing field so that people don't get burned out, where they can still take care of their families and their responsibilities? So again, these two trends really go hand in hand, overworked and often underpaid. I see it a lot with my clients who I talk to, and they have budget cuts and things are impacted by them. And then number 10, race and gender are still important D&I, diversity and inclusion factors. Whether you like it or not, the whole concept of race and gender issues are still front burner issues. They're not back burner issues. They are front burner issues. This morning on Washington Journal, a C-SPAN program, where it's a call-in program, I listened to a woman from American University. I can't think of her first or last name right now, but if you go to the American University website, there is a report that was created based on the research that American University had done, where women not only are not in large numbers in politics in the United States, they're not even looking to become political servants. They're not even looking for opportunities in politics in large numbers. And it was a fascinating discussion, which I think reaffirmed my whole concept that we are not that far away from these kind of discussions dealing with race and gender. And that just happened today, and that study you can go to. There are opportunities of growth and development throughout the United States and certainly throughout the world where we need to recalibrate and look at ways where we can get to know one another and we can resolve some of the issues that we have around race and around gender. I think it's very refreshing that New York has a new mayor who was just installed a couple of days ago. He's dealing with his snowstorm for the first time. But no one, from my perspective, again, I'm not in New York and I was not a part of that race, but I was refreshed to find out that he is in a mixed marriage. His wife is African-American. Her parents are from Barbados originally. She grew up in Massachusetts, in Springfield, Massachusetts. They met on the campaign trail many years ago, and she has a very interesting background, so you can check her out. But here he is now the newly elected mayor in New York. His wife is black and their kids are mixed, and it was not a big deal. So that's refreshing. That's really exciting that we're to that point. We certainly have a biracial president. President Obama is biracial. So we've come a long way in terms of where people can go and grow in the United States, but we still have a ways to go when it comes to equal distribution of wealth, when it comes to leadership from an equally distributed perspective, when it comes to women, as I mentioned earlier, in terms of having more women run for office, to be interested in public service, to where it just becomes the norm. All of factors deal with race and gender issues, which are anchored in gender, race, in the diversity discussion. So those are not going to go away. They're going to be very important. So those are the top 10 trends. And again, if you go to my blog, tellcarol.com, and go to today's blog for January 3rd, you'll be able to click through and get these slides into the other slides that I presented that day. Just a little food for thought for 2014. I hope you're getting off to a great start. I thank you so much for listening on this Friday. Hope you have a great weekend, and we'll just keep rocking and rolling for 2014. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas. Empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. We'll see you next Thursday. Take care.